Blog Talk Radio.
Black free thinkers, where we walk by sight with a bright flashlight to illuminate night. Free thought, we don't walk by faith in the lost mind state, cause it's not quite safe. We don't recruit, we're not peers from a church, so don't be spooked, we're not here to convert. The only truth that's not pulled from a text, show me proof that's not good after death. This is the challenge to think for yourself, break it out of the bottle and speak what you felt. 310-982-4273 to get through. A venue for community and this is the zone. If you'd like to speak with Kim, then pick up the phone. 310-982-4273 to get through. The next tree branch is Rainer, and it's best you listen to reason, science, and skepticism. It's loaded with straight facts, inspiring and dope. She can make Bill Nye retire with lab coat. Humans are hilarious, and every other Friday I'd like to hear commentary on culture, people. So I hit up Super Mario and bring in Emmeline to discuss why we're capable of ultra evil. It's normal for my brain to have a two-way street, but if there's collisions, well then you got to just mention it. And don't be afraid of where the truth may lead, ignoring your position of cognitive dissonance. When Father Teresa preaches, it's hard to stop. So Kim paired me up with Alfred in the barbershop. I have a extended family and all these places now, as the free thought tree pollinates around. Yeah. This is the challenge to think for yourself, break it out of the bottle and speak what you felt. 310-982-4273 to get through. A venue for community and this is the zone. If you'd like to speak with Kim, then pick up the phone. 310-982-4273 to get through. Black precinct, where we walk by sight with a bright flashlight to illuminate night. We don't walk by faith in a lost mind state, cause it's not quite safe.
Yo, 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 what's going on, everybody? The voice you're not used to probably hearing. This is MC Brooks, filling in for my man Carl. Here with my man Alfred. About to do a lovely little show on common theist arguments and logical fallacies. How are you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing all right, man. You can hear me good?
Yeah, we can hear you. Just fine.
Trying to make sure I don't have any static in the background, because that seemed to be a problem, you know, during the debate last week.
Oh yeah, that was a little bit of a thing. It's all good though. So yeah, so tonight, as I said before, going to be discussing common theist arguments, which there are like a shit ton of them. So we probably won't have any shortage of that. And we're going to be discussing logical fallacies, as well as a myriad of other subjects. Now, here, Black Freethinkers, you know, as we do on every program, we're here to encourage you how to think and not tell you what to think. Encourage you to think outside the box, you know, and never hesitate to share any information that you may have. So, Alfred, do you want to lead off on the first subject?
Yeah, I just want to open up and say we're going to be bringing up some things that, you know, some folks, especially theists, might find very offensive. It's not that we're trying to, you know, bash you, we're not trying to make fun of y'all, even though y'all say some pretty funny shit. This is to actually help progress both sides of the fence, because you can't come to a proper conclusion if you do not have a logical leg to stand on. And this is why we need to first make sure that everyone is well educated in the basic things like a sound argument, logic, and reason. Now, I know in some sense, especially from a non-theist perspective, that theology in and of itself is illogical, but if you're going to try and convince somebody of this corporeal world, that, you know, what you believe is true, then you're going to have to come with some logic. That you're not going to get past that period. So I'm going to actually just start off by giving some basic definitions. And the ones that I chose are ones that seem to give theists the most trouble. And it's the ones that we have to keep bringing up over and over and over again. And it really degrades conversation. It really degrades any form of debate when we as non-theists have to sit here and actually lecture and teach theists about some of these things that we ourselves took the time to learn, because I didn't know about a lot of this stuff, especially when I was a theist. You know, even though I wasn't given a choice, I was not privy to burden proof, logical fallacy, the actual definitions of an atheist or a pagan or this, that, and other. All these terms were used colloquially. And if you're not well read on what some of this stuff is, you're going to fall for these misconceptions. And a lot of these theist arguments, which you'll see, depends on misconceptions. It depends on logical fallacies and sometimes just outright lies. And we want to get past that, because that just ends up infuriating, you know, the person that's being misrepresented in the end. So, like I said, I'm going to go ahead and give some basic definitions, and then, Mr. Brooks here can offer his perspective and his insight on some of these. And so we'll kind of just play this, tag team this issue, so we can kind of have a well-rounded examples of what's going on here. So first one that I vehemently push in any conversation is burden of proof. And this burden of proof has just been beat up. It is the dead horse, the dead zombie horse that keeps coming back up, that I honestly am just so tired of killing over and over and over again. So, definition. I'm getting this from Merriam-Webster's website. You can look on the website. You can look in the actual book. It's in there. All right. A burden of proof is a philosophical burden of proof that is the obligation on a party that is in an epistemic dispute to prove sufficient warrant for their position. This holds true for either arguing party. And let me break that down. If you make a claim, you yourself are responsible for providing proof of that claim. The one that I use for theists that may seem silly, that may seem immature, is that how do you know I don't fart cupcakes and rainbows? You know, it's silly and it's funny. Like I said, it's silly, but if you can't prove that I don't fart cupcakes and rainbows, then I guess I fart cupcakes and rainbows. You know, it's up to me to actually prove that to you, not for you to disprove it. You can't disprove a negative. So it's not on someone else to say, well, hey, you need to disprove what I just asserted, or if not by default, I win. That's not how it works.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right, and that's like that's the thing, is moving the goalposts or moving the burden of proof is that's definitely one of the most common theist arguments, especially when we get into things like the existence of God or the existence of souls, spirits, and other supernatural entities or places. They're like, oh, you know, an angel came and visited me last night. You can't prove it didn't happen, therefore I'm right. But the fact of the matter is, like you said, it's not really on us to disprove that an angel came to you. You may have saw something that you may perceive to be an angel, but that's not on me to prove that you didn't. It's up to you to convince me that you did, that this is something that actually happened. It's not, like you said, it's not on us. But that's a common tactic, you know. It's, you know, they want to throw it back at us as non-believers to throw us off and try to position themselves in a favorable light, put themselves in a favorable position where they can be like, well, see, you can't disprove it, therefore it must be right. And nothing works like that.
It is a good tactic, but for those who are somewhat seasoned in debates and discussing and just logic, it's it's not really conducive toward a conclusion. And I want to say, and correct me if I'm wrong, I want to say it's Occam's Razor. Actually, no, it's not Occam's Razor. It is Russell's Teapot, or also known as Celestial Teapot. I'm having a brain fart here. I have my notes here, but I didn't put Bertrand Russell in here. But Bertrand Russell, good man, you know, he's an author, philosopher. He died, I think, I want to say 60 years ago. This man was a big proponent of logical reasoning, thought, any kind of cognition. And he is the one who came up with the idea of a celestial teapot. During his time, some of these same arguments were coming up. And then he actually made this kind of nonsensical scenario to illustrate what he was talking about. And a celestial teapot more or less goes like this. He proposed that there is a teapot, a regular teapot, in between two of the planets, you know, Mars and wherever the nearest one is, I forget. And so he would tell his opponent, okay, so you disproved that it's not up there. And of course, his opponent's like baffled. You know, this guy's a, you know, big debater, you know, smart guy. Why would he say something like this and make such a claim? Well, he was doing it to illustrate that his opponent's attempt to reverse that burden of proof is nonsensical. And so that is how the celestial teapot or Russell's teapot was born. So if anyone has any, you know, question about that, feel free to look up celestial teapot and it'll clearly illustrate it. But that is just one of many logical fallacies. I have a master list of logical fallacies here, and believe it or not, it is a 100 level. Go ahead.
I was going to say same here. I actually had a question for you. How do you guys, like, we have a caller here. Do you guys just take them as they come in, or?
Yeah, actually,
do you want to just bring the caller in?
Yeah.
Okay. 281, you're live. Hello?
Hello?
281?
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, what's going on, man?
I think I know who this is.
I just want to clarify that he does shit cupcakes for rainbows, first of all, but yeah. But yeah, I'm just listening. I'm just like bullshitting a little bit. I'm sorry. I just want to bust in a little bit because that's like the first time I actually listened to my cousin's little blog TV thing. So y'all can continue.
Thanks for calling in, man.
No problem.
No problem.
We're just gonna put them back on hold. Okay. Now, where were you just getting back into? Do you have a list? I think you said.
Yeah, I actually have a master list, and I think Kim showed me this one. It's the master list of logical fallacies, and it's actually a 100 level college course. It's not anything that, you know, these philosophy majors have to master before they. Well, they do have to master it before they graduate.
Yeah.
But it's nothing that, you know, you would expect 300 level or 400 level. No, it's basic stuff. A lot of them you've heard a lot of these logical fallacies, and in the back of your mind, and I know in the back of my mind, I know something doesn't sound right. Something is wrong with this argument, but I don't know how to address it. And as I learned about these logical fallacies, I said, okay, here's where they're going. Here is the break in reasoning that you need to address. And I also have yourlogicalfallacyis.com, which is a pretty humorous site with some of the major ones. And there are lots of logical fallacies. And a lot of websites make a dichotomy of them. They split them up one side and the other. I believe formal and informal, but I'm not going to get into all that because it gets really kind of convoluted past that point. And anyone feel free to go look up some of these. But you actually mentioned another one, which we both were listening to Emmeline's debate last week. And this is the one I called out. I called out a few of them, but this one, as soon as it happened the first time I think their name was Alexa, attempted this. And she did it about six times, which is moving the goalposts.
Yep.
And it is the most frustrating one that I've come across, because it's like, You take a position, I take a position. You can't change your position in the middle of the discourse because your position is now being attacked and you have not sufficiently fortified it.
Right. The kind of ironic thing about it was that Alexa kept moving the goalposts while at the same time accusing Emmeline of moving the goalposts by saying stuff like, oh, that sounds great if you're talking about religion, but we're not talking about religion, we're talking about God. I'm like, okay.
Oh, right.
She did that. I distinctly remember several times. I'm like, well, you're not refuting the point that she's making. You're just trying to say that she's moving the goalposts, which she's actually not doing. You just don't like her response to what you're saying, which is why you're trying to change the conversation and not actually answer any questions. And certainly it's why she contradicted herself. I don't even know how, I lost count how many times she contradicted herself last week as far as the debate was. But,
yeah.
You know, whenever theists really try to do that tactic, and it's a smart tactic because it gives them control over the conversation. As soon as they get control over the conversation, you know, they can basically assume that they can take it however way they want to take it because they've got you feeding into it. I just got him to move away from what we were talking about. So let me move the conversation here where I know that I'm superior, or at least think I'm superior, and I can control, and I can basically turn them into my puppet as far as this debate goes. And I can just make them go however they want, however I want them to go. It's a smart tactic.
Exactly. It is, and it's a carrot on a stick. But I was trying to think of a good defense against this, a good way to combat it. And Emmeline found the perfect way. And this is when Emmeline caught on to it, because I think she did it twice or maybe three times, and Emmeline caught on to, okay, here's what's going on. So through Emmeline's own retort, she stated, at such and such time, you said X. Is that true? And had her reaffirm it so she could pin her down instead of changing, okay, well, I'm a Christian. Well, no, I just kind of, I can work with Christians on weekends. Oh, well, now I'm a Sunny, you know, and that's what I called her at the end, because, well, now you're just some pseudo-theist Sun Eater that somehow is loosely based in the realm of theology with a little bit of hint of Jesus and a dash of pepper. It really got that bad and that watered down in the conversation. So what was the point of even debating if you were just going to hop around with your position? You know, you can't debate water and while it's moving. That's a horrible analogy, and I should have thought of that better.
It makes sense. It's kind of like the moving river. I think that's what it's called, like the flowing river or something. Like you can't pinpoint or something. I don't know how it goes, but I know what you meant.
Yeah, you see where I was going with that. And I should have actually started off with the definition of logical fallacy, but burden of proof bothers me so much that I started off with that one. But here's what a logical fallacy is. This is the definition. Like I said, I'm getting this from Merriam-Webster. I'm not pulling this out of my ass. I'm not pulling this out the evil book of atheism or wherever they think we get this shit from. A formal fallacy is a pattern of reasoning that is always wrong. This is due to a flaw in the logical structure of the argument, which renders the argument invalid. That is where logical fallacy comes from. And like I said, there are many, many examples of these that are split into formal and informal. Some get kind of convoluted. There's even a fallacy's fallacy. And I've had to catch myself, because I'm good to call out logical fallacies, but I have to be careful not to fall into that fallacy for me calling out someone's error in an argument that is fallacious, but is also true. You can have a bad example or a bad analogy, but the reasoning is actually accurate as far
right.
as the insult to what it concludes. So it's like a game of mental chess. I like it. So All right. I have my own list of about five, Brooks. Do you have a kind of tentative list in your mind that you have as well, or?
You mean of logical fallacies?
Yeah, I'd say the most common one that you hear from theaters.
Oh, geez. A lot.
Yeah.
Truthfully, it's kind of hard to pinpoint one because I hear them so frequently that it almost seems like one giant run-on sentence of arguments. Like, the first one that just came to my mind right now is what they call the argument from popularity. You know,
oh, yeah.
If God didn't exist, then why does everyone in the world believe it? You know, everyone in the world, you know, 90% of Americans do, therefore there must be a God. I'm like, oh, my God. That's usually my first response. I have a deep sigh, and I'm like, all right, how do I respond without sounding like a total asshat? Okay. Just because everyone in the world believes it doesn't make it true. Everyone in the world, everyone used to think the world was flat.
Exactly.
That turned
That's
out
the
not
first
true.
I think about.
Lots of folks used to think that black people were genetically inferior to whites. Again, not true. You know, they used to think that the sun revolved around the earth, and when we now know that the opposite is true.
Yeah,
like,
and it's
just because everyone believes it doesn't make it true.
Exactly. I mean, it's I can't remember that guy's name. He might be important. He might not be. I'm pretty sure that whoever this nameless, faceless guy is, it's something about the truth being relative. I think you might have heard of that guy.
Well, it's just the beauty of Google.
Yeah, I love being facetious, but that's also called the bandwagon fallacy as well. Is everybody jumps on that one because it's popular, and so it's just easy to believe because your neighbor and his neighbor and his neighbor believes it. So
right.
Hey, why not? Why not jump on it? And we see this played out and just in nuance. Throughout our entire society, just because it's intellectually lazy, there's nothing, you know, it takes more effort to combat this than it does just to hop on it and just say whatever. Yes, that's also true.
Yeah.
And that
I mean,
one,
and
I love.
Yeah, I mean, and it's comforting, you know. It's just like with anything else. It's like no one wants to be the only one that believes something or does something. It's like. If you don't want to be the one kid in class that can't, it's like you don't want to be the one kid in gym class that can't make a layup, but as soon as you make one, you feel cool, you feel good because, you know, everyone else can make one and now you're with them. You know, it makes you feel better about yourself because you know you're not the only one. The second you get isolated, you know, you get nervous, you don't know exactly how to feel. And as far as, you know, beliefs go, you know, you want that reassurance. And knowing that someone else thinks like you do, it's reassuring. So, of course, you'll go along with it. You're like, okay, well, I'm not the only one who feels like this. So, you know what? It can't be wrong. Or it can't be fallacious.
Exactly.
At
and
all.
This plays into so many other social issues that we have, like the need for solidarity, confirmation bias, all of these things. That it plays into, and they all work, they all coincide and coalesce with each other to add on to that. So then that's where we get stereotypes from. But
right.
You can't see how this starts and what these concepts are and how they operate with one another. You never know it was a stereotype or anything of that nature. So that one's one of the most frustrating ones that it's easy to dispel, but it's also easy for people to fall into.
Right.
One of my favorite ones, man. And actually, that bandwagon one was number three. You took one of mine, but that's okay. We got lots. Yeah. All right. One of my favorites, and this one comes up. I know this is a lot of people's favorites. This comes up when they're getting frustrated. And you can tell they're getting frustrated because it happens immediately and it's blatant. The ad hominem fallacy. And I know you know this one.
Of course. Of course.
Here's the thing, man. We've been calling ad hominem fallacies when some of them are actually name-calling fallacies, which is a completely different one. I had to do a little reading up and find out that this is actually two separate ones. Ad hominem's like, you know what? Well, you're just asshole, you know, and you suck. That's an ad hominem. Now, you've also heard, well, you're an atheist. How the hell could you know about Jesus? That's actually name calling. When they apply a label to you that is a pejorative, or vice versa, you know, you're just a stupid Christian. That's all. That is a name calling style. So it's not ad hominem. So that is something that that comes up in using a frustration, or someone is just, they're completely back into a corner and they have no way to retort logically, or all social decorum is going out the window. Zero fucks are given. You know what? I'm just going to attack you as a person because you, sir, suck and you smell like fire and brimstone. So it
pretty
is,
much.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what? I can't fight you straight up, so now I'm just going to hit you in the dick. You know, I'm playing dirty now. Forget, you know, forget all the rules and the respect and forget even admitting that you made a point that I can't respond to. I'm just going to go for the jugular, or in this case, I'm going to go for the balls. Who cares?
Yeah, and it's really, really sad that it comes down to that sometimes. And make no mistake, this goes for a lot of atheists too, that I see, especially some of the younger ones that just want to antagonize Christians and Muslims and Jews or whoever else. They'll do this too, and they'll do not necessarily the ad hominem, but they'll definitely do the name calling and just label them as, I guess, Neanderthal because they have not seen, you know, the light, I guess you could say. So it's like we have to make sure that folks in our own community don't resort to that, because that does not help any of the social causes that we represent, especially not anything in humanism. It does not.
Exactly.
It continues to hurt the
not to mention you don't want to come off as you know, someone acting like you're just this intellectual elitist and you're just so much better off because you're an atheist, you know what I mean? Like that people, you know, as soon as you do that, a lot of folks won't even be worried about what you even have to say, even if you're right.
Exactly.
So you're right, because I mean, the thing is, atheism is already stigmatized in this country as it is. The last thing we need are folks who are out here basically living up to the stereotype that we're all heartless douchebags who just think we're better than everybody
and eat babies.
Yeah, and eat babies. Well, I mean, I actually did have one for dinner. So, I mean, I had to take responsibility for that one. But other than that, the rest. It's pretty tasty.
Anyway. What's another one for you?
Let's see. Let me pull my list back up. I stepped away from my computer for a second. Let's see what I have here. Well, we already did that one. Whatchamacallit? Actually, the loaded question.
Ooh, yes.
The loaded question. You know, a question that's designed to, as soon as I answer, is going to lead the conversation exactly where you want to go. You know, you have a question that has presumptions built into it, so it's like it's almost impossible to answer.
Exactly.
That's one that definitely comes up often, especially when you engage Christians on social networks, or you know, in spaces outside of, you know, our little atheist groups on Facebook. Let me see if I can. I'm trying to think of one off the top of my head.
Well, it has a built-in presupposition. It already supposes that their reasoning or their belief system is correct. So they'll say something like, you know, so what are you going to do when the world ends? It already presupposes that there is this apocalyptic, you know, countdown that's going to happen, and that whatever they believe in is a driving force. Even though that's such a short question, it is, it implies that what they believe is true. It's not, you know, hey, so what do you think happened when you die? That more is a very vague, hey, here, what is your interpretation on this event? This event is going to affect us equally because it's going to happen to us, both, but if there's no presumptions built into it. There's a little childish high school question that came up like that, that the boys in the gym class would ask each other, and that either, I forget what it is, but either way you answer it, yes or no, you were a homosexual. And you might know what I'm talking about. I can't think of what it actually was, but it's been like 10 years. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, gosh. Wow. I haven't heard that. Wow. I haven't heard that in about 10 years. I went to an all-boys high school, so I'm pretty sure I know what it is. It's not coming to me.
Yeah. It's silly. And for me personally, when I hear that, I think that person's being an asshole. Because I recognize it right off the bat as what it is. And then my cousin, he sent it to me. Does your mom know you're gay? So if
right.
you say yes or no, it's still, that's a presupposition built in that you are homosexual.
Right. Stuff like, have you stopped beating your wife? Like, what?
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
Exactly. And it is... I don't like presuppositions because it is the reverse of what you're supposed to do. And a note, you recognize an event or a scenario or recognize anything. You collect data around it, facts, evidence, empirical data, refutable, testable data, not anecdotal. And you then draw a conclusion from that. You don't draw the conclusion and then go look backwards to try and find evidence to support it. And that's what you see a lot in some of these arguments, is that the presupposition is made, the conclusion is made. Then, okay, well, we need to go back now. We need to find Noah's Ark. It's silly.
Exactly. Just found another one that I definitely hear a bit more. When I get into discussions with these super, super Afrocentric believers, I guess, or theists, I should say, the genetic fallacy. You know, that something is good or bad, you know, based on where it came from, or who said. You know, oftentimes with a lot of these super Afrocentric folks, and a certain group from Atlanta comes to mind. they'll say the origin of the species can't be true just because it was written by a white guy.
Yes.
And because the guy is white who wrote it, that regardless of whether the information is true or not, it's false because he's white, therefore it's bad. And you shouldn't follow it. It's not worth reading.
And I always like to mess with them. They hate me, by the way, especially ones on YouTube, King Grand, whatever he calls himself. I think he's all talking about, he calls himself King something. And I'm like,
I know what you're talking about.
It's like, okay, you're railing against the white man. You hate him so much. Nothing he can do is right. But yet you're sitting on a computer right now on the internet made by a gay white man, gay white atheist at that. So you hate him so much, you know. You need to create the Negro pewter and, you know, and really represent brothers. You know, just sit out. I hate, you know, this willful ignorance like that because it serves no purpose. How you can prove on your own, yes, what this guy said is true, but because he is of his race, then he is automatically discredited. So how does that make
it's not always even that. Like sometimes it'll be stuff. It'll be. Well, we just had a caller in queue. I guess she hung up. I lost track. Or they'll say stuff like, oh, you know, it comes. You know, some was written by a woman, therefore, you know, it's invalid. You know, a woman wrote this, therefore, it can't. You know, it's not worth following. or something like that. Or, you know, it's frustrating, to say the least.
There's nothing you can really do other than call out for what it is. This is bullshit. It's just complete bullshit. And misogyny, racism, one or the other, it's ridiculous. But,
something, you know, you should basically judge something, whether it's good or bad, on its information, not from where it came. Like, despite the fact that I'm pretty sure, you know, both the two of us, as well as anyone who's listening, is probably against Fox News, you know, it doesn't mean that everything that comes from Fox News is bad, just because they're Fox News. Every now and then, you know, it's the what I'll call the broken clock. You know, every now and then they'll get something right. So their credibility isn't completely gone just because they're Fox News, you know.
Exactly. And then sometimes that's what we have to look at as far as, you know, what BS say. And like I mentioned earlier, the fallacy is fallacy. Just because they are who they are and the arguments that they make, you automatically assume that, well, it's fallacious, therefore it's wrong, when in reality it's just a bad argument that they're making, but it's actually true. So it is something you have to look out for and just be privy to and not make so much, you know, assumption. Like I said, this is not, you know, this is for theists and non-theists, whoever, what have you. But, I'll probably say the most visited argument from the theist, and I have this as number one, is argument for ignorance. And this one comes in so many forms, and they'll take this one and mold it for whatever century it is, and I've just heard some of the most ridiculous, some of the most humorous ones argument for ignorance. And I don't think there's one example that really sticks out the most, because they are all equally, to some degree, equally entertaining. And I'll give you the definition, and then we will go from there. That's when I had it. There it is. Okay. Argument from ignorance. A fallacy that since we don't know, or in quotations, or can never know or cannot prove whether a claim is true or false, it must be false or true. An example is scientists are never going to be able to positively prove their theory that humans evolved from some other creatures because we weren't there to see it. Now, this one's funny, and I've actually heard this one and a variation of it, that since you weren't there, how can you prove it? That's also a double standard. Your beliefs have no ground to stand on in this world other than a book that you assume is true, but you also were not there to see these things that's in this book, but you'll readily believe that, and examples of magic and unicorns and basilisks, but, you know, hey, we had a common ancestor thousands of years ago that we were descended from, and we were actually part of the animal kingdom. That's just fake, man. No, that's ridiculous. The devil put, you know, bones in the ground to confuse the bitch.
There's a funny comic that's been circulating on Facebook. I don't know if you've seen it. There's one of like God, like lifting rocks and like putting bones. Like, oh, they'll never find one here.
Yeah, I've seen that.
I definitely died. The other side of what you were just saying is as far as you know, we won't know because we weren't there is. That evolution happens at such a slow, gradual rate that even if somebody were alive, like you say, over this span of millions of years, the change is so slow and gradual that it wouldn't be noticeable. It wouldn't be like, you know, you could just look at someone and say, hey, you know, your nose is definitely about 3 inches wider than it was 4 million years ago. Crazy, you know. It would just, you know, it's not something that our lifespan is long enough to observe anyway.
Yeah, and it is just the point that they like to pick up on. You know, hey, where's the missing link, and you know, you will never find this transitional fossil. And it's like, you don't find, that is not how shit works. You don't
right.
have, I've actually never met a theist, or I've never talked to a theist that fully understands how many of these concepts work as far as biology or evolution. I'm trying to think of genetics. They will be the first ones to criticize that, and the scientific method. Just you learn that in high school. Either
right.
all of them slept through it, or they actively and willfully refuse to learn it. But they are the ones that are at the forefront of denying this stuff and creating these logical fallacies and these illogical arguments to combat them, because it does not align with their theology. And then that's when it comes right back to confirmation bias. Why?
Yep.
You know, why are you so vehemently against some of these concepts but not others? So, okay, well,
right.
these don't align with their worldview and their religious view, so it has to go away, because, shit, man, I can't have anything that actually actively challenges what I believe in. That's ridiculous. You know, I need to be around yes men and yes women to confirm what everyone else believes. And that's one thing that is always bothered me about a church, is that there's nobody disagreeing. There's nobody saying, hey, that doesn't sound right. There's none of that. There's a bunch of folks
right.
sitting around. And at least in my experience, I'll be the first one to admit, this is anecdotal evidence. This is from my personal experience over the last 25 years. You know, I've never had an opportunity to actually see this. Maybe it is out there. Maybe there's this theological debate team where they're actually out there dispelling misconceptions and
uh-huh.
actually talking about something that could be true. I highly, highly doubt it, but I've yet to see one or hear about one. So, you know, hell, who knows? I won't make
yeah.
that argument from ignorance, logical fallacy, to say that there never will be something like that. I will try my best to avoid that, but I highly
yeah.
doubt it. It really seems like a lot of these arguments are just, you know, designed this way.
Nice choice of words right there. That was one of the common theist arguments I was going to bring up, the argument from design. But before I even get into that, we have two callers. We have two callers. One of which is Raina, who's live.
Hello.
Hey, what's going on?
What's going on, Alfred?
Nothing much. I think our viewers just increased by 20 by hearing your voice, but you know, everything's going good.
Good.
And good. We have an 804 who's now on the line.
How y'all doing tonight? How y'all doing? This is DeVore.
Oh,
hey,
what's going on?
Oh, everything. I'm enjoying the conversation.
I am glad. I definitely
yeah.
wanted some more input, other than, you know, us two just kind of, you
yeah.
know, going back and forth, even though we got a lot of material, but, you know, especially from, you know, some of our female types, as we call them in the military, it's always good to get a different perspective, because
yeah.
maybe something that seems, you know, really irritating to me might be completely different to you, and I would be remiss just to assume that, you know, we all are getting pissed off at the same ones.
Well, I mean, you brought up some good ones,
yeah.
and Marcus was actually getting ready to get into one of the ones that came up a lot in that horrible debate that Evelyn, won handedly, because the Christian was so unprepared, but she kept bringing up this argument from design quite a bit, and, you know, and unfortunately a lot of, you know, I mean, it seems like something that should be true when you are a believer. You know what I mean? It seems like something that makes sense. You know what I mean? If we believe that the world, that we're special, and that there's a creator that cares about us, that, you know, formed all of this with us in mind, that, you know, all of these things make sense. You know, we look in the world and we see intention, you know, and that's not something, you know, that's, I guess, just, you know, something that Christians do, but a lot of other people do, otherwise we wouldn't have religion. But unfortunately, it's just not true. When you look at it on its face, I mean, first of all, there's no evidence for any deity whatsoever. And then the other part is that everything is so poorly fucking designed. You know what I mean? Like, people forget that diseases are natural. You know? Cancer is natural. You know? Bacteria, viruses, you know, all of these things are natural. And we have a body with an immune system that can't fight all this shit off. You know?
Yep.
We have,
and you know,
you know,
that doesn't even get into, you don't even get into, you know, nature. You're just talking about just human. You don't even get into natural, the natural disasters and whatnot that happened out there. And this
exactly.
shit was
have,
allegedly
this planet
perfect.
Was made for human life. The planet was made for human life,
yet
the
we
Earth
have everything that can kill
moves.
Us.
Right. It can literally
everything
open up and
kill us,
and it literally moves.
It's like a level in Sonic the Hedgehog. You know, everything can kill
right.
you.
Right.
I'm going to steal that. Yes.
Yes. And
the,
I mean, the
whether
Earth,
it's the spikes
the
or the guy throwing coconuts.
Fire.
Right.
Right. Actually, you know what? Actually, somebody told me that there's a surprising number of people who actually die from coconuts hitting them every year. But I don't know if I believe it. I have never looked into it. But I have heard about that. I've heard that is a thing. I'll have to look into that because I'm skeptical. But
God will.
I'm sure there's probably more people dying from coconuts hitting them in the head than I think. But it's probably not as many as this person was trying to say they were. But, you know, I mean, there's all other sorts of things, too. I mean, now we're at the top of the food chain, but we weren't always at the top of the food chain. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So for a creation that is supposed to be in the image of God, supposed to be, you know, special, you know, God made us really inadequate, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of things we had to figure out on our own. You know, so
right. Son couldn't even give us an instruction manual.
Really? You know, he couldn't design us right. So would you really want the instruction manual?
Nah, not really.
I had to ask him. Like, why would you put the reproductive system so close to your waste disposal area? That's what I'm just kind of curious about.
Right.
Or why would you make the food that feeds us and the food that, you know, and the tube that we need to breathe, you know, collide at one point, you know, to where, you know, the breathing tube needs a covering. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
It needs a covering, you know, it has to close when we swallow. You know, there are other animals that can actually breathe and eat at the same time.
Exactly.
You know?
It's funny. The one that, go ahead.
I was going to say, it wouldn't be unusual if we were able to do that.
No.
You know what I mean?
Not at all. But it's funny. I was actually in the creationist versus, I forgot what you call it. Creationist versus, I guess, non-theist debate on Facebook. And there's this pastor from Disciples of Feed the Kids, Feed the Goats, whatever, I don't know, same shit. And he was trying to argue against having a naturalist argument about homosexuals, about their inability to reproduce being a natural. Of course, I hit my head on my desk a few times. And I had to mention that you find homosexuality all within the animal kingdom. Homosexuals have not died out. You know, they're still being created, so how does that help your argument? And so he, you know, make his, you know, very, very subtle homophobic comments. And so I decided just to pull out this little tidbit of information, a question. And the question I proposed to him is, why is there a bundle of nerves near a man's prostate that induces pleasure?
Right.
And after that, he had to promptly go eat something, and he called me disgusting.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm like, I'm bringing
pretty
up
funny.
Facts. It's true.
Well,
I'm
I mean,
asked.
That's just, I mean, it's true. And there's really no real reason that we have to really experience pleasure at all. You know what I mean? There's not a significant reason. We could still, you know, have...
You can reproduce without really having the need for pleasure.
Well, I was going to say, we could still even have the impulse to have, you know, to reproduce without needing the need for pleasure. You know what I mean? So, I mean, but the fact of the matter is that human beings have more sex than any other animal in the animal kingdom, you know, per live birth. You know what I mean? So we have we're screwing all the time. You know what I mean?
Just not making babies,
you know,
out of it.
Right, we're not making babies out of it. So if there was a God out there that really, you know, was, you know, thinking about this, he would have made it so that one could only have sex when one was supposed to reproduce. You know, some animals, they only have sex in cycles. You know, pandas, for example, they don't have sex. Well, it takes so much energy out of a panda. They don't even want to have sex. I mean, we put them in captivity, and we try to breed them, and they just look at each other. You know what I mean? So, you know, there's really no reason that we would necessarily have to experience pleasure. We could just be like pandas and just do it when we're, quote-unquote, supposed to. You know?
Right.
I got me rolling. Okay.
If you put two pandas in together, they don't just automatically go to each other. They're not like other animals. Like a lot of other, like gorillas, all you got to do is just like put them next to each other in, you know, with poly glass between them, and they're ready to go at it. You know, you put two pandas in a pen together, and they just don't look at each other. You know.
They work on that bamboo.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, their metabolism is very slow, and they don't have a whole lot of energy to expend. So they're like looking. They're like, I could have sex with you, or I can eat this bamboo and sit where I'm sitting. I think I'll sit where I'm sitting. You know.
Sounds like some American.
Right.
But the basic, the most infuriating misconception that I still come in contact with, but I thought would eventually go away, is the basic definition of an atheist. And it does not continue to surprise me, and in some ways it does. It's a real, I'm not sure even how to describe it, because it's not hard to obtain a definition of it. It's not hard to realize what it is, but since it does not match a theist worldview, then it has to change. Just like the concept of homosexuality being natural, it does not match their worldview, so they will just change quote-unquote reality in order for it to fit. And like I said again, I'm pulling this from Merriam-Webster. I'm not pulling this out the evil devil atheist Bible, you know, or wherever the hell they think we derive knowledge from. This is Merriam-Webster, online or on text, on paper.
Yeah.
All right. Get ready for this. This one was kind of convoluted, too. Definition of an atheist: one who believes that there is no deity. Bam. That's it. Now, here's the problem, because I knew that there was something out there, and I had seen this kind of crazy notion, and I've been told this notion that there are no actual atheists, that everyone is all atheists are actually agnostics. And it comes from places like Conservapedia, which I'm going to actually read off what it says there. And before I do that, Raina, 2002, there was a study done by ABC Television, and 150 people died from coconuts, more than shark bites, actually, for that year. Yes. That's weird. Okay. So, okay.
I think she hung up.
You might have hung up? Oh.
Yeah, I think she hung up.
That's fine.
She'll
be
back.
Yeah, we'll bring her back in whenever she wants to come back. It's cool. The definition starts off, you know, pretty fine. They actually pull it from the Stafford Encyclopedia of Philosophy, which I think is a pretty good choice. Atheism, as defined by the Stafford Encyclopedia of Philosophy, the Routledge Encyclopedia of Philosophy, and other philosophy reference works, is the denial of the existence of God. Now, I have a problem with that one because it's a presupposition. but I'll continue. The Merriam-Webster Dictionary's definition of atheism is a disbelief in the existence of a deity. So, you see there's a difference in those two definitions. And they set that up like that to put that presupposition in play early on. And if you put that presupposition in someone's mind and it matches up with their worldview, then that gives that confirmation bias a chance to start working early on. And then it goes into some purported variations of atheism.
Right.
Many atheists like to make a distinction between strong atheism and weak atheism.
Okay.
They define strong atheism as believing God does not exist, while weak atheism as neither believing nor disbelieving. However, this usage is incorrect and has been invented by atheists to boost their numbers. Never have I heard that from any non-theist of any kind at all. But you know, these folks.
But you haven't heard. What hadn't you heard?
This distinction. You know, we have strong atheism and then we have weak atheism, and I think they're called something different too. Some people still kind of refer to strong and weak atheism, but that distinction is real. But Conservapedia is making the assertion that the usage of strong, just that dichotomy that we make there, that's incorrect, and that we invented this to boost our numbers. That's the only purpose of it. It's not actually a division of, you know, our lack of beliefs, but it's just a smokescreen. So here's that's where the bullshit continues. If you believe God does not exist, you are an atheist. If you neither believe nor disbelieve, you aren't an atheist, you are some kind of agnostic. So here they are acknowledging a part. They're telling a half truth. This is a half truth fallacy.
This is DeVore, not Jude.
Yeah, DeVore, my bad. Yeah.
What is their definition of God?
Their definition.
I think I have a problem with their definition.
Okay, here is the Conservapedia definition of God. God is a sovereign creator and eternal ruler of all things and beings that exist, whether in the physical universe or in the spiritual realm. Not only is God the creator and the ruler of these things and beings within those two realms, but he is also the creator of the realms themselves. God created the physical universe, and before he acted in creation, the universe did not exist. Likewise, God did with the spiritual realm.
And could you tell me, you know, right beside the word God, they tell you whether it's a verb, a noun. You see that little thing?
This is from Conservapedia, and they have neglected to put what part of speech it is. I'm looking all up along here, and they give Bible verses, of course, but none of the actual annotations as you would find. So let me look in the etymology. Okay, in the etymology dictionary, it has God as a noun.
Okay. Because I have seen even in what is the name of that thing? Where the Bible has its own, like, little, you know, and they have beside it peace.
Is a P beside it?
Mm-hmm.
That must for pronouns.
I've seen that too. In what you call it, the concordance or something like that? I don't even forgot the name.
Oh, the name of the website?
No. I would guess you would call it the Bible, a Bible dictionary. You know, whatever the dictionary is of the Bible, when they try to explain what words are.
I'm not too sure.
The word God is plural. But I have a problem. I don't know what I would be called. I have a problem as far as the meaning of the word God. I have a problem with what they consider God is. Or I don't know what I am. the emphasis that they put on, you know, what he can do. Oh, and every time, you know, something happened, he did it. And I don't believe in all that.
Yeah, and that's a good point. That's why you have all of these different sects of Christians, because some believe that he is the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Some believe, like you said, on the website Conservapedia, that he is just one sovereign creator. You have ones that believe different things. But it's interesting that they can define what somebody else believes when they are farthest from that. So for me to avoid making any logical fallacies, I would say that's a little bit too reaching for them to define or to say that our divisions there are illegitimate, yet they themselves have many, many, many divisions of what they actually believe that their creator is. And I would I don't spend time debating theists about the Bible, because it's like debating Humpty Dumpty or Harry Potter. It's magic and bullshit. If you actually look in the 2000 version of the King James version of the Bible, it actually states that basilisks and unicorns are real. We all know as adults that is complete bullshit. If you actually look in Numbers, I want to say it's 2020 or 2022. I can't remember which one, but it states that God is the strongest unicorn. I think I'm done with Christianity. So it's so funny, and I just forgot where I was going. It's so funny that they would define something like that. Yet, I don't think that many Christians consider what a deity is. I mean, it's not their deity, any deity. Mm-hmm. A deity, typically, from what our limited corporeal knowledge can contain and label, have three qualities: omnipresence, omniscience, and omnipotence. The ability to be everywhere, the ability to know everything that is and ever was, and to be all powerful. That is far beyond anything that we can conceive something like that, but we cannot actually physically do that. That is an ethereal quality of an ethereal being. So for us to even comprehend what a deity is, we would have to have some kind of concept of these three attributes. Now, we take those three attributes and we apply them to a deity. How can we ever interpret what that being does? Since that is so far beyond our comprehension, supposedly. But yet, they have the gall, I'll say that, to try and contain such a being in context of a compilation of this book that's poorly written and contradicts itself, and yet they want someone else to believe this. Can we get N2K in here?
Yeah, I've got him and Raina are back on the line.
Okay, yeah.
All right, N2 and Raina, you're both on.
Ladies first.
You have Raina?
No, you can go first. It's fine.
No, ladies first. I'm a gentleman.
No, I'm actually in the middle of...
I don't think she has a comment.
So
that's
go
what
ahead.
I'm saying, yeah.
Okay, I think that when we get into philosophical discussions about the existence of there being a higher being and there being a God, what we don't understand is that, and this is something that I always bring to the forefront, is that we have a tendency as human beings to anthropomorphize something that is not human, and we try to make it human, and that's where the conflict begins. Because when you talk about God, and I'll bring up something that maybe is very far-fetched, however, it's very legitimate. Anagrams, meaning that you can take the words, the letters in a word, and you can switch them around, and it creates a new word. Take God. Switch the letters around, you got dog.
Right. Exactly.
Now, my point in bringing that up is at what point do you make a distinction between God and dog? Same letters, different definition, different word. And this is where, and like the host was saying, this is where we get into the argument, and I'm not saying argument literally, I just mean that subjectively. This is where we get into the discussion of whether you're agnostic versus atheist versus religious. I'm not a religious person because I know where the word religion comes from. It comes from the Latin word religio, which means to bind, which means to tie together.
Right.
And religion is sponsored by government.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what form, what fashion of history you've been involved in. Religion, and we didn't even get Christianity until 325 A.D., the Council of Nicaea. Okay? And then my host talked about...
That's not exactly true. There was Christianity before the Council of Nicaea.
Okay, there was Christianity. There was Christianity before that, but they weren't called Christians. They were called agnostics. They weren't Christians.
I don't think that's exactly true, but they were different sects.
We're on the same path because what happened was they were driven underground and they were called heretics, and then once Rome realized that they extended themselves militarily so far out that they couldn't even run the world, because that was the first real empire, they couldn't run the world militarily. So then what they did was they said, hey, let's create a religion. And it didn't even start out as
I'm not sure that's exactly the way that it went historically.
Okay, my point is that even the Catholic Church is a government body with influence and has influence in history. Exactly.
So I'm not going to dispute you there. But the fact of the matter is that not every religion has been government sanctioned, and in fact, there's been
I'm talking about religion as we know it today. You're obviously very well versed in terms of in historical perspective. Most people don't even understand that. They don't even get it. They don't even know that it didn't start out as Christianity. It started out as Catholicism. And if you look up the word Catholic, it means universal.
Yeah.
It started out as a Catholic religion.
Right.
Not as Christianity. So we're on the same page. I'm with you on this one. Because you got knowledge that you need to tell people about. And that's real. And then once they turned it from Catholicism to Christianity, if you look at, and I like to call it the doctrine of Jesus Christ never talked about Christianity. Yeah. Jesus Christ wasn't even a Christian.
Right.
He was a Jew.
And you got all these people who are sitting here saying, oh, I'm a Christian. I believe in Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ never professed Christianity.
Exactly.
Had nothing to do with it. Now, here's my question to all of you who are extremely intelligent. How did the how did it get so twisted to where the people who believe in the second coming of Jesus Christ, and this has been over, what, 3,000 years? Mm-hmm. He ain't coming back. And guess what they're going to do? And I'm telling you right here and now, I might get cut off. They're going to introduce this holographic stuff because that's the only thing that's left. Okay? You see it in the movies. You see the holographic images. I think they did a concert with some rapper or some entertainer where they plastered Tupac's face.
Coachella. Yeah.
There you go. There you go. And guess what? They're going to do the same thing with Jesus Christ. They're going to plaster his face on the sky in a holographic image, and everybody's going to bow down. Well, not everybody.
I mean, it sounds far-fetched. I don't necessarily see that happening. But I mean, certainly the Catholic Church is not above fraud. There have been numerous cases where, you know, icons that were, you know, shown, you know, said to have been bleeding or crying or, you know, otherwise doing something that was regarded as being miraculous has been disproven.
Exactly.
So certainly we know that the Catholic Church is not above, you know, doing things that are fraudulent in order to gain the faithful, you know. But
would you admit that the Catholic Church, they own 90% of the property in the United States? The Vatican.
They do own it. They own quite a lot of property, and they control quite a lot of money. And you know, no one is going to dispute you there. I wouldn't go so far as to say that they're going to do that. I mean,
no.
I don't know that they're necessarily. I mean, you know, I don't know for a fact that there are widespread conspiracies. I know that there are people within the church, you know, that have done things in the past, and so I'll say that they're. I don't put it above someone, you know, doing that at the Vatican or someone doing that at even, not even at the Vatican level, but at like, you know, sort of the more local level. I don't put that above anyone, but I wouldn't.
You know, that's why you're laughing.
No, I'm laughing because I'm not into sort of, you know, conspiracy theorizing, especially when there's not sufficient evidence. I mean, obviously there's been a conspiracy to cover up the, you know, the instances of child sexual abuse in the church, to cover for, you know, individual priests and parishes that have been engaged in that. So, you know, obviously there have been some conspiracies, but saying that there are some conspiracies and saying that, you know, all conspiracies are you know, certain conspiracies are then given credit, I don't think is something that you can say logically. So
okay,
I mean,
well, let me ask you this question.
Based on
everything you said, they've been able to perpetrate all this stuff in the name of God, and they get away with it. Why do we let them get away with it?
What we do see is the three major religions coming together. You know, and they're coming together. To take over, I don't know whether you see it where you're at, but when Farrakhan comes on, right? He's not reading from the Holy Quran. Most of the time,
Farrakhan hasn't, but Farrakhan in his brand of Islam is not the original Islam. I mean, he is not
And then look at what happened. Remember what happened to Eddie Long?
Yeah, I know where she's going.
He went to that remember?
Yeah,
okay.
And this all brings up
together.
I always want to
say that's the new world order.
Yeah.
They're coming together to control.
That's a whole
other. I don't necessarily agree that with you there.
Other,
I think that's
sorry.
The way
I can't. I can't agree with you there. But I understand that, you know, that it is frustrating.
Okay. This is going over the hour limit, and I wanted to kind of get into a section where we talked about things of divergent from what we spoke about. I had to take a little absence to handle something real quick, but I appreciate Raina going into the history a little bit more. I mean, we had a call, N2K gave a ham-fisted kind of reach back into the history, and like you said, it was a cult to start off with, and that's something that a lot of people don't know. That's why you actually, from what I've learned or from my own experience and what I've heard from other people, you learn the religion before you learn the history of it, because if you actually knew the history behind the religion, you'd be less likely to be into it. And like I say, I thank you guys for coming in, but we're trying to get this back on track. We're going to do another show, a continuation of this, that we'll actually reach back into the history of things and find out why the definition of atheist is so stigmatized, because it has a lot to do not with just being the opposition of a theist, but also how it was used during World War II to, you know, also, I guess, to point the finger at the godless commies, you know, quote unquote. So it's still being associated with that sort of dialogue. But I want to hop into something that somebody mentioned it too, and they didn't name it by name, but the other logical fallacy here on my list was the black and white fallacy. And I had this one proposed to me in college that I'd heard before, but not as overtly, that, you know, I would much rather be a Christian, because if I'm wrong, then there's nothing happens to me according to atheism. But if I'm right and you're wrong, then you go to hell. So I have the safer choice. Again, this is a presupposition. They've already stated from this, and it's also a bit of a loaded statement rather than a loaded question, that they've already presupposed that their theology is correct. So from that is where we get these, they drew a conclusion that was erroneous. But the problem is they got to that conclusion from an assertion that is unfounded. There's nothing saying that their theology is correct, that their God exists, this, that, and the other. So we have to learn to recognize some of these and address them accordingly. Brooks, do you have any other ones that you want to hit on? And then pass those later?
Let's see. After we got hella off track, so I was I have to get back to where my notes are. Let's see. And just so you know, I had to mute everyone just a second ago, just because the show was getting really off track. I kind of wanted to bring it back to center. Alfred was trying to interject, and unfortunately, couldn't really hear him over everyone else, so I just muted everyone. We'll bring you guys back in just a second or so. So just stay tuned. As far as the arguments, though, a big one that gets brought up everywhere, happens at least once in every debate I see, every debate between atheists and theists, between theists of different religious backgrounds, and that is the straw man. Happens in at least every debate. Straw man argument is when you misrepresent someone's argument to make it easier to attack. Example of this would be like if someone says, you know, we should put more money into like health and education, and someone responds to that by saying that you're surprised that someone wants to put money, that someone hates our country so much that he wants to leave it defenseless by cutting military spending, which had nothing to do with the original statement, but that's what a straw man is, purposely misrepresent an argument to make it easier to attack.
Okay. Yeah, I had to mute my mic. My son's downstairs now. But we're gonna go ahead and unmute everybody after I'm done giving my piece on it, because I know we heard some straw men and Emily's debate, and one of the most frustrating ones is, oh, you're just an angry atheist, and you're just rebelling against God because of all that anger. And that is such bullshit. That one really, it doesn't infuriate me, but it annoys me, because it's like, you first don't know the definition of atheist, and two, you don't realize that the majority of us used to be Christian or some form of theist. And being angry at something we don't believe in honestly makes no sense, but it does from the perspective of a theist, because it, again, aligns with their worldview and it aligns with their theology. So they would much readily believe that, even though it's very fallacious and completely fictitious, than acknowledge reality that some people are just not convinced. It's extremely frustrating, because it's like that movie with Adam Sandler, Anger Management, you know, where the guy's telling him, you know, to calm down and stop being angry, and Adam Sandler's fine, but he keeps saying it over and over again that it annoys him and it actually does make him angry. And that's really what it is a fishing expedition for anger and to try and draw it out. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You antagonize someone to the point of them being angry. So see, there you go. Here's all that angry atheism coming out, all that evil or whatever the hell that they say, and how they rationalize, you know, a normal human response. But like I said, it matches with that worldview. Another one is that, is one of the funny ones, and you may have heard this, Brooks, or seen someone use this, is that, oh, well, you don't want to believe in God because being a Christian is too hard. And that one is just humorous, to the point that I can make the best retort that I have to that is that you're too intellectually lazy to actually be an atheist. And that one, it's a borderline name calling, or it's right there, but it's not actually going over to say that being an atheist. It does kind of imply it, but it's a retort in the form of that what you're saying is very invalid and actually, you know, insulting. So I'm going to report to you to show you how that feels, because it's not helping the conversation any. It's just you're repeating something that is a misconception because it matches your worldview and because it's easier for you to attack, even though it's a complete fallacy. It's false. I have yet to actually hear anyone in the free thought community say, well, you know, I'm just here because it's too hard to be a Christian, you know, going against gay marriage and telling people they're going to hell is rough work. I can't do this anymore. So I'm going to hang out. I'm going to come over here and hang out with you guys. Have you ever experienced anything like that, bro?
I'm sorry, repeat that again. I was actually in the middle of reading something.
Have you ever, in your entire time being amongst people of the free thought community, online, offline, whatever, have you ever encountered anyone to say, well, you know, I'm just kind of here with this label of being an atheist or agnostic, because being a Christian is too hard. And, you know, just all the rules and, you know, praying and stuff like that, it's so difficult and time-consuming and cumbersome. I want to do something easier. Can I just hang out with you guys?
I have never heard that. I have never heard anyone say that. At least no one serious. You know, I've heard it said in jest, like you know, like you just said it. But I've never heard anyone seriously say, being a Christian is too hard. I'll just dump God and do whatever. Never heard anyone say that.
It's hilarious. That's like I said, it is really, really funny, because the shit that they say like that makes no sense, and they have no actual evidence of stuff like that. But it's easy to kind of throw that out there because it matches their worldview and it aligns with their theology. So it's an easy position to attack, even though it is false. Completely false. Let's see. Let's go ahead and open up the lines and open up the callers to see if they've ever experienced anything like that. But we're just two guys, you know. We have limited experience. Maybe somebody else has actually had an experience like that. But to validate,
right. I've got Deborah and Raina back on the line right now.
Yeah, I've never experienced anything like that. In fact, to me, it sounds completely the opposite.
Yeah, and that's what I was getting at, is that it's much, for me being, when I was a theist, it was easy for me just to co-sign whatever anyone else was saying. I didn't have to think, I didn't have to read the Bible, I just had to go along, yep, Jesus is the way, gays are evil, and all you atheists are going to hell, and I feel good about myself. Everything that I do, I'm going to heaven, and I'm a good person, and all this, that, and other bullshit, that is too easy. You co-sign, you believe, you obey.
Yeah, I don't know that I necessarily had that particular experience, although I know a lot of people that did, and I've been to places that were like that. I mean, particularly in the last church that I was in, like, they were really about, like, reading and, like, studying and all that good stuff. So it was actually there that I really, you know, was reading and I had doubts. And my minister actually, you know, he wasn't one of those people who would just say, oh, if you have doubts, you know, you're just reading it wrong and you just need to go to the Lord. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't one of those. Like, he was like, you know, you're not going to have all the answers. You know what I mean? He was like, and, you know, if something really bothers you, it's probably because they didn't know themselves. You know what I mean? And so, like, it was kind of like, you know, after talking to him, like, I'd have even more doubts. I'd have even more questions. And so I would start reading other things. Like, I would start reading, like, C.S. Lewis and, you know, some apologists and things like that. And then I was like, wait, these arguments make absolutely no sense. You know, and that's what started me off towards, you know, atheism, you know.
Well, I always like to say I was born in the church. I can go all the way back. And my preacher was, he wasn't one of them shouting preachers. In fact, he was a scholar teacher at the seminary at Virginia Union University, at that seminar. And the seminary, and like he, you know, he thought about, you know, even though he was bad, you could listen to him, and in your mind you could ask questions. You understand what I'm saying? So I'm not angry. I don't know whether, I guess maybe, I'm pretty sure a lot of things nasty and dirty happen in church. Okay, I've seen some. But as far as me being like I am, I just was very curious. I'm a very curious person about a lot of things, and I did a lot of research. And that's why I'm like I am, okay, and what, you know, because I question.
Exactly. And can y'all hear me typing in the background?
I hear something.
I think that's
I don't know what it is.
No,
I mean, I'm in a pretty quiet room right now, so.
Okay. Yeah. Just want to make sure. But, yeah, I'm not sure where this came from. I really don't know, but I think a lot of these misconceptions are actually rooted in what's called lying for Jesus. And I just lost my thing. Lying for Jesus is basically a concept that was coined, I want to say, and actually I've just found my name. The overall, and I'll give you a ham-fisted example of it. It's okay for any believer, any follower of Christ to somewhat deceive or completely just outright lie in order to get someone to become a Christian. Yeah. Now, okay, here we go. This is Rational Wiki, the antithesis to Conservapedia. Lying for Jesus is a form of pious fraud, which happens when some Christians believe that falsifying information is acceptable if that brings people to Jesus or somehow supports his historicity, saintliness, or supposed godliness. The practice has a long and venerable history in the Christian religions. Now, this has been traced back to Lactantius, early Christian author Lactantius, circa, you know, 240 to 320, along with his anti-Christian contemporary Porphyry of Tyre, circa 234 to 305, wildly exaggerated the stories of orgies and other forms of debauchery that the first century Romans had allegedly practiced. Oddly enough, many of these stories were based upon anti-religious critiques written by Romans in the first century. Christian historians have used these stories ever since to emphasize what early Christians allegedly struggled against in their society. Even back then, there were stories of mystery. See how far that is? That is ridiculous.
I mean, it's just like the lie that a lot of Christians tell about, you know, being fed to lions and, you know, mass persecution, you know, that they supposedly have faced. You know, there's no evidence that shows that they have been persecuted in such a manner, you know.
Exactly.
You know, the Friendly Atheist had a really nice blog on it, and, you know, there's been some pieces in various news outlets about it, but they still continue to perpetuate the lie, and they still continue to perpetuate the lie that they're being persecuted today, which I can find absolutely no evidence of.
Yes, and yes. I have friends and fellow soldiers and all types of people I talk to that. Say it again. Hello.
I didn't say anything.
I heard a man's voice. I think it was somebody's phone. I still have, like I said, I have friends, old coworkers, classmates and whatnot that will repeat this. You know, Christians are being persecuted, and the new form now is just to put things, our memes up with, oh, it's okay for gays to express themselves, but when a Christian does it, the world's coming to an end, and it's okay to bash Christians. It's like, you all still make up the majority. In this country, you are not the oppressed majority. Well, that's their new term for themselves, is the oppressed majority. When in reality, it's like people are tired of being antagonized. If you go back through history, it's just American history, every major social event that had to be resolved was at the core started and fueled and funded and driven by Christianity. Your religion has been the antagonizer in all these events. People look back and say, okay, we're tired of this. We're going to stop. We're going to actually progress instead of regress our society. And you can have your religion as crazy as it is, whatever, that is your right. And out of all the things that they take away from what we do believe in and what we support, none of them will acknowledge that a lot of us respect their right to their religion. They will focus on how much we talk about it and critique it just like anything else, but they will not acknowledge that we support their right to have it. So, like I said, that doesn't match with their worldview. That having it match, you know, have it matching what they want to believe themselves to be out as victims and as persecuted, that works better because you show your opposition in a good light, then you can't have
well,
more
if they
comfort.
Didn't lie about that, then they couldn't lie about prophecy. You know what I mean? Because
exactly.
Then it doesn't fit their end-time scenarios. You know what I mean? If they say, oh, yeah, we're at the top of the food chain, you know, and we dictate to people what's acceptable, and, you know, we have politicians in our pockets, and we have all of the government funds for, you know, nonprofit organizations coming directly to us through a pipeline that's just for us, that's set up just for us, you know. They don't want to talk about these things because these things contradict the prophecies that, you know, things are supposed to get harder for them, you know. And for some of them, you know, the Antichrist is already here and his name is Obama. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they really can't give credence to, you know, anything that appears to actually be, you know, based in fact. But, you know, they have to distort things.
I can't see how someone can preach, give to Caesar what is Caesar's, and don't pay taxes. I'm sorry. I mean, like, I think they have a right to be to believe what they want to believe, too. I just don't think they should take over and control everybody.
Well, see, that's the thing. They need to have that structure. They need to have a theocracy like Saudi Arabia that makes them feel as though they have control. Because, again, we go back to this concept of having things match their world belief, their worldview that aligns with their theology. So you can't have Jesus can't come back if, you know, if the world's not ready for him. I've heard that one too.
Yeah.
Another good misconception that I know both of you and Brooks has also heard of, and NTK, is that this is a Christian nation, and I cringe every time I hear that because it goes against everything that this nation was set up against. As an American, you should be able to recognize history and at least know, if you're going to quote the Constitution and hold up the stars and stripes and say how much of a good American you are, you could at least pay attention in history class. You could at least recognize that the founding fathers were not Christian. They were actually deists. These are men grown up in the Enlightenment. Well, not grown up. They're the men that have been seasoned by the Enlightenment period. So the common themes of just the dogmatic and very archaic belief system is not going to align with their worldview at all.
Mm-mm.
So trying to go against what's already written in the Treaty of Tripoli, 1797, Article 11, is completely false. And it is just a big misconception and just outright lie. Honestly, some of them don't know, and I brought it up to them, and they've actually gone and researched and gone, wow, I've never known that. I've never seen it. I've always been told. I said, well, yeah, I know you've been told that. I was too. That's what I was also taught as a Christian too. And of course, I didn't even think about it. I didn't jump on it. You know, this is Jesus' words, you know, somewhere maybe. So I'll just agree with it because it sounds good and it matches my worldview and it matches my theology. And that's what it really bothers me about this whole system of belief, because if you can honestly make up anything and have everyone go along with it, that opens the door for so much to go wrong that I don't think that the good that you claim your religion does can outweigh that, because there's nothing keeping it in check. If there's nothing to keep it in check, how is that supposed to make me feel good? How is that supposed to make me feel good as a citizen when you say stuff like, well, this is the only thing keeping me sane and keeping me from killing people? How am I supposed to take stuff like that, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. I'm glad they took prayer out of schools. You know, I don't like the indoctrination in children from the get-go, you know, from the beginning. That's like indoctrinating into Christianity.
Well, that's why they like
it. I just think it's important to remember that whether or not we're giving children religion, we're indoctrinating them with something. It's just that we hope that we're indoctrinating them with, you know, with values like, you know, thinking for yourself and, you know, caring about your fellow human being and, you know, that type of stuff.
Christianity.
Oh yeah, you can do all of that without Christianity. Obviously, you know, we're sitting here living proof, but it's unfortunate for the reasons that you know, that Alfred gave. You know, that people, you know, indoctrinate people this way, and you know, will, you know, lie to them, you know, for the purposes of preserving the institution or preserving the faith. You know, it's unfortunate because it does put people in a bad spot. You know. So.
Okay, Brooks, are you back?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm back.
Okay. Hey, can we go ahead and get NCK's input on this?
Yeah. Where is he at? Okay. He's back on the line. My bad, man.
Oh, no problem. Here's the only thing that I wanted to interject. We can sit here and talk about religion all day, every day, all day long. Religion is what, and I quote, the opiate of the masses. Religion means nothing. It doesn't matter what you believe in. What matters is what you act on.
Exactly.
And what most people
actually beliefs determine actions.
Okay. Well, let me finish, my dear. The problem that we have as people is that we act on stuff that we really don't know anything about.
Yeah.
See, when we sit here and talk, just like we're having this discussion right now, and we can get into this whole religion thing, whether religion is legitimate, whether it's illegitimate, it doesn't even matter. How many people actually know anything about religion from a historical standpoint? How many people know about Mithra, which was part of the religious group in Roman culture? How many people know about the Sumerians? How many people know about the Akkadians? How many people know about the historical implications of all these mystery religions? How many people know about Moses? And most people don't even know. Moses is not even a factual character.
Exactly.
He's fictitious. He's fictitious. And guess what? Who's the actual character that they stole Moses from? Is Akhenaten.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Who's the actual historical figure? If you go and look up Akhenaten, who's the father of King Tut, who brought monotheism into Egypt.
Yes, yes.
You understand what I'm talking about.
That's right.
You understand what I'm talking about.
And
now,
you know, the Bible didn't have amen in it.
The Bible doesn't have any legitimate historical figures.
That's right.
That's the game. That's the game. That's what people don't get.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ is not a historical figure.
Exactly.
I mean, I wouldn't go as far as to say that there are no legitimate historical figures in the Bible.
Okay, name one.
I didn't say that there weren't. I mean, there are some. There are a few. I don't recall their names because I am not in physical archaeology.
Name one.
I said I wouldn't go as far to say it. You're the one who said that there wasn't. I'm saying
there is some historicity
to the Bible. Hey. It's just limited. Hey. It's like reading historical fiction.
Who?
You know, there are some.
Let her speak.
Yeah, there are some things in the Bible that have some historical basis. Now, I wouldn't go so far to say that the entire book is fictional, but it's like reading historical fiction. It's like reading Abraham Lincoln Vampire Slayer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Abraham Lincoln existed. Some of these places that are, you know, discussed in the Bible existed. Some of the people may have even existed. Not all, but some. You know, some of the people are probably fictionalized from what they were, you know, who they originally were, like you were saying with Akhenaten. I don't know that to be true. I've heard that said before, but I've never said that or read that in any credible, you know, academic, you know, journal.
You can look it up. All you got to do is Google it.
You got to do a little bit more than Google it. I mean, it has to be vetted. But
okay,
anything,
you can do the research. Akhenaten was a historical figure.
I know Akhenaten was a historical figure. We know that. We've read.
Moses is not a historical figure.
And I agree that Moses is not a historical. You and I are in agreement that Moses was not a historical figure.
Okay,
we're in agreement there.
And that brings me to my next point. Actually, is that what she's referring to is more of allegory. You can't just say that this such and such does not exist when they're allegorized in another form of literature.
Let's define allegory, my man. Allegory means that you're telling a story that doesn't involve actual individuals, and what you're doing is you're presupposing a particular event or events, that's what an allegory is. It's a story. It's not real.
Okay, but does the person that is being allegorized exist or not?
No, by definition. If it's an allegory, it's not real. It's a story. So you can presuppose a particular individual being involved in the allegory, but that individual is not real. You can't prove to me that Jesus Christ existed. You can't prove to me that Moses existed. You can't prove to me that Peter existed. You can't prove to me that anybody in the Bible, Methuselah, I don't give a damn who you talk about, Adam and Eve, you can't prove they existed.
Right.
Okay.
But you
now,
can,
well,
but allegorically, you can prove their existence.
Alfred, I just want to say this one point, and then I'm just going to, back out for a little bit. My only point is this, is that we can't make arguments against bad arguments from theists that are also bad. And I think it's a bad argument to say that, flat out, there's no historicity to the Bible, like none whatsoever.
Exactly.
To say that it has limited historical value is true. You know what
exactly.
I mean? To say it has no historical value
right.
is incorrect.
Right, I agree.
But here's the thing. We know, we've done a little bit of research that we'll take the Great Flood. We know that is a retelling of the Epic of Gilgamesh. We know that.
Right.
Okay,
right.
So that begs
right.
the question, does the Epic
right.
of Gilgamesh have some historical backing of actual relevance, but over time and over retelling, it has been exaggerated like the telephone game?
Well, we know for a fact that in that region,
in the
Nile Valley, in most valley, river valley civilizations, there's annual flooding. So to individuals who live in, river valley regions, this idea of a flood, that a disastrous flood, is not something that would be, fiction. That would have been an actual event.
Can I say something before I get offline?
Now, okay, go ahead.
Can I marry you?
No, I'm sorry. So back to what I was saying is that,
I thought I'd throw some extra stuff in there. But what? You are extremely intelligent, and you are a definite queen, and I love the way you talk. And if, I don't mean no disrespect to your man or your husband, if he's listening, I didn't mean no disrespect. I'm just paying homage to the fact that you got a good woman. That's a good woman.
All right.
Or actually, she has a good man.
In any case, back to what I was saying. The point is that there are some things that would have happened or that would have had cultural, historical relevance. Some of those things we don't necessarily have access to because of the passage of time. Some of those things were exaggerated. There are stories that, that we know to, as folk tales that have some truth to them. There are folk tales about Shaka Zulu. And things that Shaka Zulu
did.
Damn,
I want to marry this woman.
There's folk tales and legends about Mansa Musa. We know that those things could not have possibly happened in real time, but we know that there's probably some ring of truth in there. So we have to, we can't just go ahead and just wholesale write off the entire Bible as though it has, no historical relevance.
It's just very limited. They copied
yeah.
a lot. You understand, from the tablets.
Yeah.
They had tablets and they copied. They just made it into their story. Because there were scrolls. You had the Atrahasis, the Immanuel Elish, all of it was in cuneiform language.
Understandable and
you know, is it possible that that could have happened? Sure. But I don't think that there's been sufficient evidence brought forth to suggest that they were copied. What we can say is that human beings have, we have, because of the way that we've evolved, we have, in some sense, a very similar way of looking at the world in some sense. Because wherever you go, on whatever continent you find human beings, we decided there were gods. We decided that we were created some kind of way. And a lot of the creation stories from people who were separated by thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of miles, they came up with sometimes similar, ideas of how we were created. So, this is because we've evolved. We evolved in a very unique way. And so when we spread out, we carried this architecture, this structure in our brains, and the way that we used it, it came up with these very similar myths,
Exactly.
So we can't necessarily put it all on, they copied. And then also there's cultural exchange. Not everything is about, okay, they stole this or they copied this. Some of it's cultural exchange. Some of it's, my God has a snake tail. Oh, my God, he just created me out of mud. Then over here, this person has said, now my God has a snake tail and created me out of mud. You know what I mean? There's a
exactly.
There's a blending of ideas that happens. And we know
and
this
we
happens
that.
In Christianity, just like we were talking on the other night on Wednesday with Annalise, there in Christianity you can see, the blending of these cosmologies in that region. You've got, Romo-Greccan, you've got, North African, what I mean? And even the influence of the Zoroastrians.
And a good example of that is I think y'all might have said the Vodun religion and the it's a version of Catholicism and I think Vodun that
right.
some of the and I used to know it. But I'll come back to it in a second, but I want to definitely
right.
thank you for dropping some knowledge on us, Raina, especially with the historical context. And like I said, one of us making the fallacy of just assuming that everything that they say is completely, illegitimate and just false because it, for some way, shape, or form, it came from somewhere, just to say whether it came from imagination or from reality, that's what we have to dig and discern for ourselves in order to say, okay, well, here's what it is and not just what I believe. And then also, like I said, falling into that fallacy of just assuming because they are who they are that it's illegitimate. But I want to go ahead and give you two a chance to, say your final words, and I'm going to, me and MC, we're going to go ahead and close this out and also give the lineup for the next few days.
Well, I just wanted to say thank you for having me on. I really enjoyed myself, and hope to talk to you soon.
Okay. Deborah, you got anything?
All right, cool.
Well, I'm just enjoying this conversation. Thank you so much.
That's not a problem.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you.
All right. Oh, okay, so everybody, that was Raina dropping us some knowledge. Definitely enjoy hearing her. And N2K giving her some compliments, but we'll call them that. But for tomorrow, if you want to hear some more of Raina, she has a very interesting show, which I am going to definitely, I try to make all the shows, but this one is definitely interesting because my wife and I talk about this all the time and there's good memes about it. Ghetto Fabulous brings this up and everyone's adopted this term, which started in my home state, Louisiana, which is ratchet. And Raina show tomorrow is at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 12 p.m. Central. And it's called What is Ratchet? Understanding how some labels are dehumanizing. So we're going to actually examine that, and pretty sure we're going to get into also how other labels of that nature, other acts are also dehumanizing, which I'm
right.
pretty sure twerking might be mentioned in that.
Of course.
you know that was going to come up, I'm pretty sure.
Of course.
I'm just going to call it and say twerk. let's see, Raina and Mario are also going to fill in Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 12 p.m. Central, on whether society is going forward or backwards. And I remember reading an article about this where a sociology professor stated that, especially racially, we are going backwards. So that's kind of disheartening, but we're going to definitely examine that. And the breakbeat with Father Teresa and Mr. Brooks here on elitism in the intellectual community.
Yeah, that'll be next Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard, 7 Central. Going to go over a myriad topics. There's a good chance I'm probably going to rant. but I won't exactly say on what just yet. You'll have to tune in on Wednesday for that.
Uh-oh, some feelings are going to get hurt.
and I also forgot to mention, we're also going to be discussing the concept of scientism on next Wednesday also. That's going to be part of our discussion as far as elitism. So, again, make sure you tune in for that.
Yeah, sounds like we're going to have some scientifically rebuttaling subjects on that. Oh, man. Anyway, that debate, that's hilarious. Okay. All right, man. Let's play our music. Let's go ahead and get out of here. Please join me next time and join everybody else. We all got interesting shows, and y'all definitely, if y'all want to learn something, come listen to us. Call in.
All right. Peace out, everybody.